Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, has been called by some an overdiagnosed disorder or an excuse for people having problems learning or accomplishing their work. But ADHD is very real for those living with it. When you're in that position, there's a choice to make. Either surrender to it with self-imposed limitations or work as best you can to overcome it. Vasquez not only shows a way to succeed with option number two, through direction, he demonstrates it through personal experience, along with being an entrepreneur and best-selling author. Also, the host of the podcast Faster Than Normal, his latest book, is The Boy with the Faster Brain, Peter Shankman. Thanks for being here today, Peter.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Shankman.com. Learn more about Peter's work, not just with his career and business, but also in dealing with and helping others see the reality of ADHD. Some stats before we get into this. According to the CDC, an estimated 3.3 million U.S. children between the ages of 12 to 17 have been diagnosed with ADHD. Total worldwide, 5 to 19-year-olds, 129 million. And with adults worldwide from ADHD as of 2020, the most recent stats, 366 million adults worldwide. You come from an interesting point, Peter, because you were undiagnosed as a child. You did not learn about having ADHD until an adult. Talk about your world in those two ages.
Yeah, I mean, growing up in New York City in the public schools in the 70s and 80s, what I had was diagnosed as sit down, you're disrupting the class disease.
Yeah.
And getting in trouble on a daily basis, you know, not for doing anything truly horrific or terrible, you know, just for being annoying. And could never figure out, you know, how come I promise my parents every single day I'm gonna go in and be quiet tomorrow, and it would never stick. I'd always, you know, get through a day or two and then back to getting in trouble. And over time, you know, I just learned to deal with it. I learned to sit on my hands and try to be as quiet as possible. And when it worked, it was great, but more often than not, it didn't, and it led to not only, you know, a tough time at school, but tough time personally, because, you know, who wants to hang out with a kid who never shuts up, right? And, you know, it was a tough time. And in college, I went to Boston University, and I got saved there. I was saved by, you know, learning that there's more than one way to work, and that teacher didn't really make you follow the rules, you know, that you had to follow in school, as long as you got stuff done. And so, what? You mean I could stay up all night and get that report done, and because I seem to work better under pressure? Great, I'll do that. And that was sort of the start of my love affair with learning how to manage what I have, because I wasn't diagnosed until my mid-30s. And then my first job out of college, I got one job. I worked for America Online, and again, they let us work any way we wanted. My second job, about 4 years later, was for a magazine firm, a company. And, you know, I go in and we have 8:30 meetings and 9 a.m. meetings and 10 a.m. editorial calendars and this. I'm like, this is Russia, and I quit. I lasted about a week. I went out on my own, and this October it will be 25 years, quarter century, since I went out on my own, and I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
As you said, too, to your parents at the time, I'm going to start my own PR business. When it fails, not if, when it fails, I'll go get a job. Well, as you said, here you are 25 years
exactly.
Later. You're not looking for a job, are you, Peter?
No, I'm not. I got very, very fortunate. Not that I worked my butt off, but I got really lucky. I realized, you know, that the things I did that other people thought were crazy probably seem crazy, but they work. And as long as they work for me, I'm doing all right. And that was sort of the major factor for me, was understanding that the things I'm doing, as long as they benefit me, who cares, you know, as long as they help me, the only people I really have to care about, you know, my girlfriend, my daughter, my parents, their opinions matter. Everyone else's don't.
You've pointed out 10 ways to maintain work focus for adults with ADHD, and some of them are, I mean, I look at them and I think it's a matter of, instead of changing your brain, adapt to your brain. Would that be a fair assessment?
It is. You have to understand that everyone's brains are different, and we're still, look, you know, 1,200 years ago we discovered farming. Prior to that, for millions of years, right, you had you had to go out and find animals to kill to eat. If you didn't kill them, you didn't eat. And so our bodies were designed for sort of super high intensity, very short work, right? Let's go chase that saber-toothed tiger for 3 hours. Hopefully we'll catch him, and then we can eat for a week, and we can just chill out and relax. And what that did for our brains is it, you know, all of a sudden, fast forward to now, we don't have to do that. We can order in all our meals, and we sit at a desk all day. And so, you know, our brains haven't really adapted to that yet. It's just such a small amount of time. And so being able to do things that keep your brains functioning at their best possible level requires some coordination. You know, I don't start my day any day, if I can help it, without exercise. Even if that means getting up at 4 a.m. and getting on the bike for an hour, which I usually do. You know, I'm a single dad, right? So if I want to exercise, pretty much the only time I have is before my daughter wakes up. And so I'm on that bike this morning. I was on the bike at 5 a.m. and I biked for an hour, and I'm still on the dopamine high from that. You know, something as simple as cold showers. Cold showers can give you a 2.5-hour dopamine fix. And dopamine is really the chemical that people with neurodiverse brains like ADHD don't make enough of, and they need to focus and to concentrate. So I do things to get dopamine the best way I know how. And like I said, that means changing a little bit of my life. There are, I try to eliminate choice as much as possible. I have two sides to my closet, and they're labeled. One says office/travel and T-shirt and jeans, and the other says speaking/TV, and it's button-down shirt, jackets, and jeans. My suits, my vest, my sweaters, those are all in my daughter's closet. Because if I had to look every day and be presented with thousands of options, oh, that sweater, I remember that sweater. Laura gave me that sweater. I wonder how she's doing it. It's 3 hours later. I'm naked in the living room on Facebook, and I haven't left the house.
There were Peter Shankman, who is a adult who was undiagnosed as a youth of ADHD. And as you can tell by his story, which you'll see at Shankman.com, success did not avoid him. Does it take a little more work? Does it take a little better understanding of yourself? Honesty with yourself? It certainly does. And he also is the author of the book, The Boy with the Faster Brain, which you're going to get into now. Because, Peter, it's a matter of how, you know, how would your adult life had been different if you were diagnosed as a youth with ADHD? Do you think anything would have changed?
I think the biggest thing that would have happened is I wouldn't have had to spend years and years and years feeling like I was broken. That was the biggest problem I had, is that I felt, you know, when everyone tells you that what you're doing is wrong, when everyone tells you that you need to be quiet, you're speaking out of turn, you're making mistakes, you start to believe that about yourself, and that leads to lots of problems. That leads to you constantly trying to prove yourself, and by doing that, sometimes you go over the line. You know, you have a conversation with somebody, you're immediately bringing back to you, oh, well, you know, when I did that, I was like, wow, he's so pompous. And no, I'm just trying to get people to like me because I'm afraid they won't, because I've been told that I'm broken for so long. So if I had been diagnosed as a kid and been taught to understand that ADHD is actually a gift, I just have to learn how to use my brain differently, I think it might have been better. I don't regret any of it because here I am now, but it was definitely difficult. It might have made some of those difficulties easier.
And with your book, The Boy with the Faster Brain, I think, too, what you help people get away from when their child is diagnosed with ADHD, there are alternatives to meds, which is a great thing to be, have that alternative.
Yeah, and I'm not anti-med. I think there's a perfectly good place. So I have a prescription. I just don't take it that often. So for me, you know, I do things like exercise and eating healthy and getting fresh air and walking upstairs, doing whatever I can to make those things work for me. For me, it's about that. And, you know, parents need to understand that not every child needs medication. Not every child doesn't need medication. You know, I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you what to do, but it doesn't need to be the first line of defense.
Is a lesson for a youth, especially with ADHD, try to learn as quickly as you possibly can how to drive faster as a NASCAR driver versus faster as a high school graduate the night after the prom? You know, do it more safely.
Well, the premise, the premise is this. You know, we're all told, well, basically, most people have brains that are a nice little Honda Accord. And a Honda Accord is fine. It's a perfectly good car. It'll get you from point A to point B. But one day, if you're given a Lamborghini, and you try to drive it the same way you've learned to drive a Honda Accord for the past 20 years, chances are you're going to crash it into a tree.
Yeah.
So you need to simply learn how to drive your faster brain. And that means, like I said, doing some things differently than the way you're sort of were taught to do it as a kid.
This is what Peter, I think, brings really forward with The Boy with the Faster Brain, is there's no need for limitations. There's always adaptations. And that's something that he writes about for adults as well. You can learn more about Peter's writing at Shankman.com, because his writing has worth, has value, has encouragement. We all need that. Whether or not we want to admit it, that's another conversation another time, but it's something that we always need, not for a matter of ego either, but for self-preservation, if nothing else. Peter Schneckman, thanks for the awareness you help us realize for all reasons and all causes. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure.